Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there, this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. I am your host, Nina Perez, and we are here to discuss life topics to challenge and transform your thinking. Let's do this. Today, I have someone that I bumped into on LinkedIn, right? So this man had such a beautiful article written, and we just had to reach out and get him on here, and I'm so glad he's here. And his name is Robert Pardee. Now, did I say that right, Robert?
You certainly did. Yeah.
All right, great. Robert is one of those rare individuals who embraces change and lives by the philosophy which he calls possibility in action, and taking his desire for transforming and putting it into his daily action. So building resilience during caregiving of his beautiful and loving wife, Desiree, he learned what it is to live life forward after loss. And I thought this was such a beautiful way to talk to my audience, Robert, because people are struggling with loss. And sure. I literally just had a friend yesterday or the day before lose her dad, who she had been caregiving for. And she was such a beautiful tribute to him because she put us through the journey of him and going to the hospital and his Alzheimer's and, you know, all of that. And it was such a beautiful thing to see and be there with her, even though it was virtually through that journey. Caregiving is a challenge. But before we get into all of that, I would love my audience to know a little bit more about you. So if you can give us a little more than what I gave, that would be awesome.
Sure. Well, I'm a New York City kid. So I grew up in New York. I wound up going into investment banking, actually, at the beginning of my career, and met my amazing wife. I still call her my wife. She'll always be my wife, I think. I met her very young. She was 17, I was 19. And we grew up together. There came a point in our lives where basically I was presented a great job in the Middle East. Mm. And we thought, okay, why not do it? Because we're young, we get to travel, it was good money. Literally, basically right after taking that job, she was diagnosed with late stage breast cancer. And that led me down the caregiving journey. It's a very unusual journey, which is why that article was in the New York Times. But having evolved with her, or watching also her evolution, I mean, if there's anybody that wants to say Maslow was right about self-actualization, I'm the guy, because I watched this woman just transform in front of my eyes. It led me to question all of my choices after she passed away. And I decided to become a life coach. I had always dreamed of living in Italy. So I came to Italy. I live in the town that my great grandfather immigrated from. And that's pretty much sort of the, you know, the short version of the story. I can definitely go in more in detail. And I have to say the coaching partly came for myself. And working through the process of rebuilding. And I started working with caregivers. Then it blossomed. And her story, I just finished a memoir. So that I'm really excited about as well. And that's where it is at the moment.
Yeah, let's talk about her. I was reading the little synopsis you sent me. It's so beautifully written, by the way. And that's just a little bit of it. So I'm excited for your memoir to come out. I am going to read that. That was touching, just that little bit. So I can imagine. Let's talk about Desiree.
Sure.
Because you started by saying that you were young when they gave you this offer. So that means she must have been young when she got diagnosed with this breast cancer.
Yeah, actually, now I can't fault anyone because we're talking the late 90s, right?
Right, right.
We were married in 89 and she was 21. I was 23. So we were very young.
Young, yeah.
And when she was 29, 30, she just went for a regular doctor's checkup in New York, and there was a lump. And he said, well, you have large breasts, you have cysts in your family, don't worry about it, which was pretty standard back then, because a 29, 30-year-old woman necessarily wasn't the profile for breast cancer.
Right.
When I received the job in the Middle East, she was doing an MD, PhD. She was just finishing her PhD, and she said, you know what, I'm going to take a sabbatical before finishing the MD. Let me come out and live there as well. Well, in the United Arab Emirates, you have to go through a health screening, basically, not a physical, but a health screening to get a residency visa. So I said, well, you know what? Why don't we just do a full physical anyway? Because it's been a long time. And they found the lump. They decided to do a needle aspiration, and there was no fluid. Now, I didn't know what that meant at the time. I learned very quickly from that point forward. She was nervous, but we both chalked it up to, you know, it's next to impossible. You're young. She didn't even learn in the medical school while she was in it that women her age really were that profile. And she had no family history. Well, it wound up being stage 3 breast cancer. She had 11 of 12 lymph nodes positive. And it was right after her 31st birthday. She had the surgery. She had a radical mastectomy on the left side. And from that point forward, we embarked on that journey. Now, my wife she was a strong woman. Man, was she a strong woman. But she also lived in a very unusual way. She didn't believe in judgment, other people or herself. So she didn't know her GPA, she didn't know her MCAT scores, she didn't know anything. She asked me to fill them in on the applications because she only wanted to know she was doing her best. So in the Middle East, it was just, and she stuck to it. She really did. She lived her life. She lived and she died exactly the way she wanted to live her life. She approached everything with the power of choice. And so she asked me, she said, look, Robert, I know enough to be dangerous to myself. I need you to help me. Will you take care of all of this for me? She goes, I don't want to know anything but the next steps. I don't want to know the details of the disease, anything. And of course I said yes, because what else could I do, right? And practically at that point, I became her surrogate, which was a little unusual because I had to live the disease to make the right choices in line with her definition, because she wanted to be aggressive. The cancer she did do a stem cell transplant, which at that time was experimental, and they found out it had no bearing whatsoever on mortality. But she decided to do it, and she went into basically I call it a quasi remission, because at that point in time, there were really no PET scans, which are so much more sensitive than a CAT scan. So it probably was in her liver, non-detectable up until it got big enough. So she was in this remission and she went back to medical school, and she decided from the very beginning when she was diagnosed, I need to use this as best as I can to help other people. Wow. And life brought her, when she recurred, which was much more difficult for me than it was for her, actually, because she actually, when she was in remission, she was sort of in a depression, because she was so afraid of when, she never told me this until it came back, when it was going to come back. Just from what she knew she was going through, she knew that she had to have a bad diagnosis. And they had told me when she did have the surgery in Dubai, actually, an amazing doctor connected to the Mayo Clinic, because it was Thanksgiving and our doctor in New York said, look, if you fly back and, you know, we're going to have to put you through the system, it's going to take too long. Just get the breast off, basically, get it done there. So when it returned, she felt relieved that she can then I guess, be who she needed to be without the fear. Where for me, it was like, are you effing kidding me?
Right.
Like,
that's what I'm thinking. Like, what? Wow, she was strong. Wow.
Yeah. And so it led her down a path. I mean, we did so, our life took off in a spiritual direction, which was unfathomable. We spent a lot of time in India. She would get on a plane the day she had chemo, sleep the whole flight over to India, and then work in a hospital, volunteer. Wow. Hospital. And there was so much. She wanted to give so much. She wanted to do so much. And when she did pass away, what I kept telling people is, I said, you know, she didn't live a short life, even though she was 41. But I said she lived an accelerated life. I mean, she lived a full life, and she became the director of palliative care at New York Hospital. She said, who better? She said, I'm somebody that's dealing with, you know, the concept of death on a daily basis. Oh. And she became an advocate for patient choice, because we found a great group of doctors that allowed us to live her disease the way she wanted. She didn't want her disease to be the center. She was a person. What she would always say is, I'm not my disease. I am a person, then I'm a patient, and then there's the disease.
That's so good, right?
Yeah.
What a good attitude. What a good attitude. So let's back up a little bit. You said you were in Dubai. So were you already transitioning to that position you were talking about earlier? So you were already in that transition over to, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, I had taken the job in 1997, and our plan, which we actually were doing because she was writing her PhD, we still had our house in New York, but she wound up going to Ohio because her professor went to Ohio. So she went there and rented, but it was all crazy. But every 6 weeks we met in a different country.
Oh.
It was just this beautiful, I went to the Emirates to actually save money, right? But in the end, we were just spending it and living life. We didn't stop that at all. It's that whole concept. But I had taken the job in 97, May of 97. She finished her PhD in October of 1998. And then she was diagnosed in November of 1998.
Oh, okay. So right after. Did you stay in that position, or were you having to change your life to do all this caregiving, right? Because as her spouse, but also as someone she made charge of, right? Her care. That's a lot of weight, right? That's a lot of weight, because, you know, you love the person already, like she's your world. And now you're making these big decisions also, right? To honor her. So did you stay in that position? Were you able to stay, or did you have to make your own life transformation?
There was a transition. So basically, while she was going through the whole chemo situation, she wasn't at school at that time. So we would be in the United States. She would get chemo. We get on a plane, fly back to Abu Dhabi. She would recover on the beach for, you know, 18 days. Then we'd fly back to New York, get chemo, and we kept doing that.
Gosh.
When she went back into medical school, she asked me not to leave the job. She's like, I love Abu Dhabi. I love our lifestyle. I don't want my disease to derail your life. In 2001, I had the opportunity of working with someone where I would be able to work from New York and only have to travel back and forth to Dubai once a quarter. So, of course, I opted for that. But as time went on, I stopped working, basically.
Right.
It was a choice. I was very lucky as well, but it was a choice, not so much from the caregiving point of view, but from understanding the progression of her disease while she didn't know, and getting more frightened every time I had a result, and I didn't want to be away from her, but also to participate in her life and give her all the space she needed. Like you said, it was very heavy. I don't ever remember it being heavy, which is really interesting.
So good. Yeah.
Because it was a gift I could give her. And I say all the time, I realize that purpose is when your values come in alignment with your passion. And so that's really what happened. And what happened for me was to learn sort of to rise above my own ego. This wasn't about me at all. Once I realized that and what I could do for her was great. And I watched her grow in this career. When the doctor, we had transitioned to oncologist midstream because I wanted her to do something even more aggressive. And we found this great guy in New York that did vitamins and all kinds of other stuff. He did traditional chemo, but he added all that other stuff in, which I think really maintained her energy level. And when he called me into his office, I'll never forget it. I'll never forget. I knew he never asked me to come to his office to discuss results. And at that point in time, he said, she really should go into hospice, but that's not who she is. So you'll have to become her hospice. And I learned how to draw blood. I learned how to flush a port. I said, just teach me whatever you need me to know. And she wound up living another 16, 18 months. And gave a very pivotal speech at VNS Hospice right before she passed away. And
of course she did. This woman is a beast.
Can I tell you something which is insane? Like, this is what's so me, because I say all the time, I am beautifully scarred for having loved and cared for my wife. I watched this woman. She had basically herpes sores up in her throat and her tongue from the chemotherapy.
Right.
She gave this speech and she refused to stand behind the microphone. For an hour and a half, her voice, the pain she must have had.
But I can imagine.
You couldn't tell. And she basically talked about the lessons, walking the line between doctor and patient. And I knew right then that was it. Yeah. That was her moment. She needed to do that. And she passed away soon after that.
Right. Wow. Yeah. What an impressive human being, huh?
Yeah.
If we can live our lives like that, even a quarter of the way, a quarter of that. Because most of us live our lives making a lot of excuses, right? And not moving forward or thinking we can't. This woman was getting chemotherapy and flying to Dubai to rest and coming back for the next session of chemotherapy. You know, most of us would be like, I have chemotherapy, I can't, you know? Wow, that's so impressive. Impressive.
You know, you said something, which is the reason I wrote the memoir. Of course, I love the woman. I want everyone to just know how amazing. But we focus so much on living in a state of joy. Like if anyone asks me about, I remember laughter. I remember joy. Of course there were tears and pain. And there was that moment that I was really thrown off kilter because of the whole, you know, it recurring. But like you just said, someone once said to me, you know, that whole story is about rising above complacency.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have this life, and how many of us, we're not building it consciously. We're not living it consciously. And then if we get that piece of paper from a doctor saying, uh-oh, you have something really bad, all of a sudden we wake up.
Yeah.
And what really this taught me, and it's a hard thing for people to hear because we don't want to hear it, but we're not meant to survive life.
That's powerful.
And so what are we waiting
for? That's powerful. Yeah. That's so powerful, right? Because that breaks the barrier of all of the fears and excuses and victim mentality and stuff that we suffer with. A lot of people do, right? I mean, I'm just coaching people myself and I'm going back into getting my NLP certification and practitioner and all that kind of stuff. And I'm realizing all of the limiting beliefs that just come and stop you and everything that you're doing in your life. And then life is gone. And then life is gone. Right. I mean, you had your wife there and then she's gone. It's like that. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like
it was 11 years and I was prepared. It was like that.
And it's like at the same time, you were able to provide her a life that she also liked, right? She liked going to Dubai. She liked traveling. You were able to stop what you were doing and say, I'm going to care for my wife. That is powerful, powerful, because I've known of couples that, you know, kind of like split when difficult times like this happen, right? So for you to be able to care for her like that also scarred her beautifully, you know? And that's a beautiful thing. That is so beautiful, because you actually did what the vows were meant for, right? It was in sickness and in health, until death do you part. And you did that. Bravo to you, Robert. Well, bravo to you.
Thank you very much. Can I jump in? Because when you talked about limiting beliefs, you know, it is so true. And the thing is, we didn't even craft those beliefs. We just assimilated things along the way and came up with these truths that really don't have much basis at all, really.
Right. They're lies.
Yeah. So I love that you do that work and you're talking to people about limiting beliefs, because why waste life? I mean, my wife's memoir is called Chasing Life, and it has nothing to do with time. It has nothing to do with time at all. It has all to do with that rising above complacency and living consciously. You mentioned before how so many people are suffering from loss. What I realized through all of that is, at its root, loss is, well, I love acronyms, by the way. So I call it a lack of security and self. It's our identity. I should have been the investment banker living a great job, having an apartment in New York with a doctor wife, living the yuppie lifestyle. Right. She dies like that. That definition is no longer there.
Right.
That's what is so hard about loss. Of course, there's the pain of losing the person. You know, I miss her every single moment. But I realized that I also had to grieve Robert, right. The husband, Robert, the caregiver. Right. Life forward, to rebuild life.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think that caregivers also don't get acknowledged either, right? Because it's something that I think people look at the patient or the person that they're caring for, whether it's a parent who deals with a child with disabilities or something, that they're a caregiver as well. And it's sometimes the people around you, family members, friends, associates, usually look at the patient and not the person caring for the person. Yeah. And so that person, meaning someone like you, kind of gets put to the wayside a little bit. You know, it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but do you know what I'm trying to say? Because that happens.
Yeah, it happens. I think it's also because people don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, that's true.
There's so much of it's not that one, when you become a caregiver, all of a sudden it's as if you're going through this master's PhD super course where you come out speaking a different language.
Yeah. Wow, that's good.
There's doctor's appointments, there's medical terms. People don't know how to interact with you. And it's alienating for some. Other people, they're just so sad and it makes them feel uncomfortable, or they realize, oh my God, this could happen to me. We lost friends, we lost family, but we gained deep, significant relationships as well. So it's part of, because it's a transition. It is a transition. Mm-hmm. You become a caregiver. I have a very good friend who lives in Canada, caring for her daughter. And, you know, her daughter can't do the things that other children do, and parents don't know how to deal with her or the daughter.
I think I know who you're talking about. Is she a caregiver? Does she have a, yeah. What's her, can I ask you her name?
Brenda.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, it's not Brenda, but I know someone in Canada who does that kind of work. Yeah. Same story.
And so, and one of the reasons why, when I decided to transition my life, I wanted to be able to help caregivers. You know, coaching is so powerful.
Yeah.
But what coaching really is you need to empower the person. You're trying to make yourself obsolete in the person's life, basically.
Right.
You know, you're not a motivator where they have to come and see you once a week to get a pep talk. And you're not an influencer trying to manipulate the way they think. You're right. Saying, look, you are unique. You have unique tools. And so you've become a caregiver. What can you put to use? For me, one of the things that I put to use and I had to learn was surrender, which I think is such an act of bravery.
Yeah.
You know,
yes, it
because
is.
There are things you can't control.
Right.
And the more energy and time you dedicate towards that, the more draining it is for you. You fall into the victim mentality because you're not able to change something that you want changed.
Right.
But there's that whole other side of it where what I realized after my little imbalance when her cancer recurred was that I wasn't there to fix her. I was there to support her journey.
Wow.
Support her in that journey. And that's all I could do.
Right.
That required surrender, right? That required, and what surrender does is it focuses you on the present moment because you can't change the final outcome. So
right.
what can I change today? You know,
that's so powerful.
And that's how we should live our life, you know, and I know.
Well, I mean, surrender eliminates ego, right? Surrender eliminates ego. You can't have an ego and be surrendering at the same time. They contradict each other.
Yeah.
So when you surrender, you're literally surrendering your ego, all of, you know, all of this, the mind of the thing that you thought it was supposed to be like. And to care for someone is, I love what you said about your job was not to fix her, was to support her, right? A lot of times we want to fix the problem. We want to fix the problem, right?
Yeah.
So then we're not focusing on the care for that person or what that person needs, right? If you wanted to fix her, you would have never let her travel. You would have never let her do that speech. You would have never let her go to school, right? It would have been like, nope, you're going to sit in this bubble. We're going to fix this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she wanted to get a dog, my heart, like I was ripped in two because I'm like, oh my God, dogs could carry diseases. She could have like a low white blood cells and she'll get a disease from the dog. Like I was going, but you know, I saw her face looking in, you know, the puppy store and I was just like, oh, no, you know.
Yeah. You're like, give me 15 of those.
that's what it is, because in the end, we can't relegate joy to the future. It's a very sad life. You know, just think about TGIF in a way, how if you really think about the concept, it means you're hating Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, I never agree with that.
But it's such a great marketing scheme, right?
It is beautiful. Yeah.
But thank God it's today. It is really the key.
Right. Oh, that's so good. Yeah. So good.
It's not easy. it's definitely not easy. It's a practice. Like we talked about possibility in action being my life's philosophy. It's a philosophy. You know, the ancient philosophers didn't say, hey, read this self-help book and you're going to be okay. They said, put these lessons into practice.
Yes.
It was all about practice. Now we're so addicted to reading every self-help book that there is, coming up with these nuggets, we feel like we're being active, but it's up until you step into, you know, what was it? Brené Brown talks about Theodore Roosevelt quote, the man in the arena.
I love that quote. Yes.
You got to step into the arena. And one of the things I learned is, you know, if you go into the arena with a big shield, you're going to think that your power is the shield.
Right.
You need to feel it all on your skin, because when you're feeling it on your skin, you're going to make the decisions, because discomfort causes growth, right? Discomfort makes us ask questions. When everything is comfortable, we'll just be sitting back having a margarita on the beach and we're all good, right? So, but, you know, like I said, this was this was a journey in a practice that evolved also because I grew up in a very difficult relationship with an alcoholic father. And I learned at a very young age about resilience and grit, even though I couldn't define them. But it gave me, let's say, that wherewithal. Mm-hmm. But what I realized is each and every one of us is resilient. Because if you think about, when's the last time you ever said, I can't take one more thing? Mm-hmm. But you do. You're still here. Right?
You take a lot more things. So true.
our back is against the wall.
Yeah.
And somehow we find strength. But what if we could find that strength at will? Waiting for our back to be against the wall. That's you know, so.
That's so good.
I could go on and on.
That's so good. You are obviously stepping into what you're supposed to be doing as well, because just this little conversation that we've been having, not a little conversation, but the short conversation we've been having, you've dropped amazing gems and nuggets already. So I'm sure that you're an amazing life coach and helping people with, you know, their challenges and where they're stuck, right? Because you have now, fortunately and unfortunately, a great perspective, right? Because you had to go through that hard loss in order to gain that perspective. But at the same time, we benefit from your perspective, right?
Oh, thank you.
So it's a beautiful thing. So before I let you go, I really want you to let my audience know about the memoir.
Oh, sure.
Just a little synopsis of what it's, you know, what it's about and the name of it and where we can find it, find you, you know, follow you, things like that, please.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Okay. Well, first, to follow me, you can just go to my website, which is robertparty.com. Also, it has all the links for Instagram and everything else on the website itself. For the memoir, which is due out on June 21st, it was my wife's favorite day because it's the brightest day of the year, right? So it's called Chasing Life. And basically, it walks through the highs and the lows of from when we met to how her life unfolded and how we were able to, there's not necessarily lessons, but as you read the book, you learn how we decided to relegate the disease to be a minor portion of what it meant to live the life we were
so
given,
good.
However long we had it, and how we both had to find our own way in that as well, because I did want to fix, I did want to make sure she was eating all the organic food, and if she wanted a Krispy Kreme donut, I'm like, no, sugar feeds cancer, no. You know,
totally get that, yeah.
And that it brings us up to, you know, when she passed away, and it was those lessons that I was able to harness to decide to follow my own dreams and leave my comfort zone of, you know, I went back to Dubai because I had a ton of debt, paid off the debt, and then thought, this is not the life I should be living.
Right.
And said, oh, you know what? I don't know. Tomorrow might be my last day. Maybe 5 minutes from now might be my last, you know, 5 minutes.
I say that all the time. Yeah.
And showed up in Italy with two suitcases, not speaking Italian, not having a job, and just said, okay, now what am I doing?
That's fantastic, right? That's fantastic. Yeah. Because you've already, you have a mentality now, like, not promise tomorrow, I'm going to do what I want now. I'm going to do what I want now, right? And I've always said that too. I say that to my kids. I said, listen, we're not promised tomorrow. Does today look good for you? And if today was your last day, are you proud of today? You know, are you really proud of today? You know, because most of us spend our time, you know, binge watching Netflix, you know, and it's like, yeah, you can have those days. There are days when you need to, you know, like just do that. But for the most part, I try to get up and I never let my feet hit the floor without three things I am really grateful for. And if I can't find those three things, I'm not going to work that day because my feet are not hitting the floor. Like, that is definitely one of my things, right? Because when you have an attitude that changes to gratitude, it changes everything.
100%.
Really start to see life differently. You love your husband or wife more. You love your children more. You know, you give better advice. You're just on, you know? Yeah. So I'm really proud of you, Robert, that you decided to take your life experiences, but, you know, also take the love that you had for Desiree beyond her life, right? Beyond her being here, because now we're all going to be impacted because of Desiree, you know? And the fact that you decided, I'm going to go ahead and write that book and I'm going to start life coaching people. Now you're touching, and Desiree is touching people beyond, right? Beyond the limits of what we put life in, this little box. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for spending time with me here. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. Really, this was a pleasure. This was really a pleasure.
Great. I'm glad, because I was really looking forward to this. And the more I kept reading like the article and the synopsis, I'm like, oh my God, I love Desiree. I really love Robert. I mean, this is amazing. So I love what you're doing. And, you know, I know we're connected through LinkedIn, so I cannot wait for your book and everything. I'm definitely picking that up immediately. So thank
Excellent.
You.
Excellent. Okay. Thank
you guys so much for watching and being here with us. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel so you can see much more amazing content like this. This was a beautiful, wonderful conversation with a beautiful human being about another beautiful human being. So thank you guys. Until next time. Make sure that you visit our website at Straight Talk No Sugar Added, where you can subscribe to our show on iTunes and Stitcher or anywhere you listen to your podcast or on YouTube, so you'll never miss a show. And while you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about our show, that would be awesome too. If you like this show, you might want to check out our book as well. It's Hit Me With Your Best Shot, How I Overcame a Hard-Hitting Life. I am Nina Perez, and I am here for you. If you are looking for private coaching, make sure that you email me at hello@straighttalknosugaraddit.com. Until next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.